Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast He Stutters, She Asks Him, which you can find on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity and privilege to talk with yet another person who's going to share parts of his story. So we're going to hear from John.
So how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've heard some of your interviews, and I think you're doing a great job with this. There's just a huge body of knowledge that's now becoming accessible to anybody with a stuttering problem. And you know, you learn by hearing other people's life stories. And finding out how they think and act and feel. So this is a great service you're providing.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. And I also appreciate that you agreed to be a guest. I'm excited to learn a little bit of your story. If you wouldn't mind, could you introduce yourself to us and tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep yourself busy?
Okay. My name is John Harrison, and I'm originally from the New York area, and I moved out to California in 1961. I tell people I ran away from home at the age of 25, which was true. I was working for my father in his advertising business and realized one day that I knew nothing of life, and so I arbitrarily set a time when I would get on a United Airlines flight and came out here cold. My father thought I would stay for about 30 days and come home, and he only missed by about 52 years. So.
Wow.
Well, let me say a couple of things about stuttering, because you're not going to hear any from me today, and that's not because I'm trying to control anything, but I worked through, learned about and worked through my stuttering issues some years ago. But I was identified really early as having a problem. At the age of 4 and a half, my parents brought me to the National Hospital for Speech and Hearing Disorders in Manhattan. And I don't remember much about what they did, but they gave me a little medal that I wore on my around my neck. One side said slow, and the other side said easy, and that's about all I remember. I had a silent block. I never got into struggle behavior because that just wasn't my personality, I guess. So. And it was not a severe stutter, but it was, as you know, with stuttering, it was troubling enough especially because in some cases I could speak perfectly fine. If I was talking to friends on the soccer field, for example, and then if I went into class and had to stand up in front of the class and give a report or speak, I would have a lot of silent blocks, and it was. It was a bit of a crazy maker for a long time. Mm-hmm. And but I never got into difficult struggle behavior, and therefore I didn't have a lot of things to unlearn like some people do who have really complex struggle behavior. When I came out here, I came out in 1961, and it was a very interesting time to come to California because it was at the beginning of the whole personal growth type movement. People were trying to find out who they are and how they felt and what things meant. Psychologists like Carl Rogers and Maslow were writing. They had the Esalen Hot Springs south of San Francisco, where they had all kinds of seminars and programs, and people were trying LSD, and people were just doing a lot of things in an effort to to find out who they were is the beginning of the whole flower children and hippie movement. And I was an unusual person because I was somebody who had a stuttering problem who was in the middle of all this. And unlike a lot of people, I think, who stutter and who want to stay away from their feelings or who are uncomfortable, I wanted to find out what all this was about. So for about 15 years, I guess, on and off, I became involved with all kinds of exploratory experiences or adventures or whatever you might call them. I did an encounter group type thing called the Synanon Game. I studied psychodrama. I did gestalt groups. I tried LSD a couple of times. I did the S training. I did the Lifespring training. These were all was and are, because some of them are still going, are all designed to give you a sense of who you are, what you're feeling, how it works, how it relates, and this was something I think that I always wanted to know, because I had stayed so divorced from my feelings that I realized I had no identity. And when I came to, California, I did it not just to have an adventure or see something else in the world. I did it basically to save my life, because I had no life back east. I didn't know who I was, and I knew at some point I had to get away. So,
do you directly attribute the not having a life to your stuttering?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because one of the things that was true about me, and for a long time, I had major issues around self-assertion. I was so caught up from a very early age in trying to please everybody, please my parents, please the teachers, be accepted, be okay, that I didn't know who I was and what I wanted. You know, I grew up in a society where image was really important. So things never ever got out of hand. It was all really controlled and you know, predictable in a way. And so I didn't know who I was. And until that day on January 21st, 1961, when I got on a United Airlines flight at 7 in the evening and came to San Francisco with a 5-day hotel reservation, and that was it. I had never done anything like that, and it was a very liberating feeling. You know, once I came out, after the novelty of being out here had passed, then I had to, spend a lot of years figuring out who and what I was. But as a byproduct of those activities, plus understanding something about what was happening with my speech blocks and why I was doing them, the stuttering dissolved. I didn't solve the problem. I dissolved the problem by breaking the stuttering down to its components and addressing the components. And that's when I realized that I was not dealing with a speech problem. I was dealing with a system problem.
Hmm.
The system involved my emotions, my perceptions, my beliefs, my intentions, my physiological makeup, and the behaviors that I had adopted for a number of years in order to control what was happening. So I stopped seeing stuttering as a thing, as a system, as a speech problem. I started seeing it as a system and not as a speech problem per se.
And then once you made that discovery, everything just started to unfold and your stuttering just dissolve?
Well, not quite. Be nice if it worked that way, but no, it didn't work that way. What I discovered about it came out in the process of doing a lot of things, of putting myself in situations where I had to experience. I'm a very, very good observer, you know, and I just watched how I acted and reacted, and after a while, things started to make sense, and I could connect things and see, you know, why I was feeling and doing what I was feeling and doing. But none of this disappeared instantly. I had to live through a lot of stuff. But, you know, I was interested in living through a lot of stuff. To me, it was an adventure. It was a quest. And the more I got into it, the more I found out about it. And the way I got involved with the stuttering community was by the early 1970s, I guess, I had pretty much worked through the stuttering issues. And I felt I knew a lot about this, but I didn't know anybody to talk to. You know, I had no place to pass along this information. And then in 1977, Bob Goldman and Michael Sugarman, two guys who were living in the East Bay on the other side of San Francisco, started a self-help group called the National Stuttering Project, which is now called the National Stuttering Association. And they had a write-up in the paper, and my wife saw the article, and she cut it out, and she said, you know, you might be interested in finding out about this. And so I did, and I called them up. And, you know, for the first time, I had a place where I could take the things that I had learned and actually do something with it. So I joined, and that was about 34 years ago, 35 years ago, I guess. And I became very active with the NSA for a number of years. I was the associate director. I edited the newsletter for 9 years. I did workshops all over the country. I did a lot of things. And it put me also in a great position to talk to many, many people and hear their stories and find out what was, you know, what was so for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of writing, which appeared in the newsletter at times, and I put out a public speaking manual for the NSA, and I ran tons of chapter meetings, and
let me ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt,
sure.
But when you met Bob and John,
Bob and Michael?
Michael
Sugarman.
I know Michael. I don't know Bob or the name, but were they the first people that you'd met that stuttered?
No, I didn't know many people, but when I was a senior in high school, my mom sent me back to the National Hospital for Speech and Hearing Disorders, and they had a summer group that met, I think, once a week, and I don't remember what we did in the group, but it was very informal. I mean, it wasn't so much speech therapy, but I can't remember what it was, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent time with that group. I still have a picture of the group, by the way. And I knew occasional people, but only very, very occasional people who stuttered.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like when you met Bob and Michael and you started going to these meetings before your heavy involvement? What did you do? You guys just sat around and talked about stuttering?
Yeah. Well, when I first met them, they weren't, you know, we weren't even meeting. You know, it was just a bunch of guys that got together. Bob, who was a car salesman, and had a knack for publicity, had gotten this article in the San Francisco Chronicle. And so we'd meet and talk, and, you know, these two guys had been through speech therapy and were pretty fed up with the whole thing because it never did much for them, and so they wanted to start taking matters into their own hands. So eventually we formed a group in San Francisco, and so I started to go to the meetings, and that's when I, you know, met a lot of great people and also started to learn a lot more about stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
What we did originally was just sit around and talk. And as you know, at some point that can get old. It can get repetitious. So we figured we needed to build a, develop a chapter meeting that people could follow. And so John Allback, who was one of the members and who was later the executive director for a long time, we put together a standard format, which became the standard format of NSB meetings for a long time. And basically the format was, in the beginning, you had a chance to talk about anything you wanted to talk about relating to stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second half, we opened it up for people to speak. And the way we set it up was you could speak as long as you wanted, and then you would only get positive feedback. And, you know, for people who had never had any positive feedback about speaking, you know, speaking to other people, it was a real door opener.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed that format for a long time. It was published, we wrote it out, and it was a standard format. But that's what the meetings were.
Did you have a lot of women in those early days?
No. No, we didn't have a lot. We had some.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's about a 4-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
And that was true in those days as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about this system approach that you discovered. Why isn't everybody else using that to dissolve their stuttering?
Well, it's because it is something that you have to live with, something you have to understand. Because people have problems with their speech, they tend to focus on their speech. It's a very natural thing to do. But what I found out is that this is not a speech problem per se. In the same way, if you were having problems because your car wouldn't move, you know, the obvious reason why the car is not moving is that the wheels aren't turning. So, but we all know that if your car is not moving, you don't spend all the time trying to look at the wheels. Because the car is a system. It has an engine, and it has a fuel pump, and it has a differential, and it has a whole bunch of things which have to work in concert with one another in order to get the car to move. And this is true around speech. The problem is people are not used to thinking in terms of systems. They're used to thinking in terms of, here's a problem right in front of me, I'm going to look at just that problem. And this, like I say, this is a system problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. There's a great analogy for this in terms of losing weight. I don't know if you've ever tried to lose weight, but, you know, I've been a member of Weight Watchers, and I've done various things. And
it's hard work.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. But what's so is that it's more than just eating. For example, have you ever been to a party where you don't know anybody and you're feeling a little uneasy, and so you just happen to situate yourself next to the hors d'oeuvre tray, and in a half hour you wake up and you find out you've eaten a quarter of it? Now, the problem is not eating, but there are other things that are involved. Are your emotions involved? Yeah, because you're feeling uneasy. You're feeling whatever it is that you're feeling, but it's prompting you to do something. Are your perceptions involved? Yeah, because your perceptions are shaped by your emotions. You tend to notice things, and the things that you notice also feed back on your perception, on your emotions, and you know, they reinforce one another. What about your beliefs? Your beliefs in yourself, your beliefs in other people, your beliefs in relationships, your beliefs in terms of how you think people are looking at you. This plays in too. What about your intentions? Well, you may have an intention not to eat, but you may have an intention to get rid of the anxiety. And so that plays a role. And then what about your physiological makeup? Well, some people just put on weight easier, you know, depend on your physiology. And what about your behaviors? Well, your behaviors have to do with putting food in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered about the system was that every point on the system affects and is affected by all the other points. So it is a self-reinforcing system that works very hard to survive, and the survival is governed by the rules of homeostasis, which your body is governed by as well. You know, like if you have a cold, you know, you make antibodies, and if you are cold, you might shiver, and your body wants to keep its internal climate at a steady pace, and so does your psyche. Your psyche works the same way. It wants to maintain the status quo. So if you go to a speech therapist and you only work on your speech, but you don't work on your emotions, perceptions, beliefs, and intentions, the system that you had set up will want to reestablish itself through a process called homeostasis, which you might remember from high school biology, and so it's very hard to move forward unless you can change how the system works. If you can change how the system works, then you can maintain an entirely different way of speaking and feeling and being and everything else. And that's what the real challenge is with this problem.
Now, do you work with people, do you provide therapy or coaching?
Yes, I provide coaching. At some point, I started to coach people, and I do it on Skype. I don't know, can I give my Skype address?
Sure, if you'd like.
It's JCHARR1234.
Okay.
And I work with people all over the world, actually, you know, everywhere from India to Brazil to Singapore to Seattle. To unscramble their stuttering hexagon, to understand how the system works so that they can begin to understand what they need to do to change. And I help them explore, you know, aspects of themselves that they would like to explore. Mm.
So do you find that some of the people that you work with, that you're coaching via Skype, are they simultaneously perhaps participating in traditional speech therapy? I'm just curious.
They might. Most of the people I think I've worked with have not simultaneously been doing speech therapy. A lot of them have tried speech therapy, and for one reason or another, it was not working. And so they heard about what I've done, and so we ended up speaking.
Mm-hmm.
See, the problem with most speech therapy is that you focus on speech. It's all speech focused. It's speech as performance. It's speech as doing it right. It's speech as in controlling speech. My problem was not to control my speech. My speech was over-controlled like the whole rest of me. I was totally over-controlled as a person. And I needed to start getting to a place where I would allow myself to be spontaneous, where I could trust my spontaneity, which is, you know, still hard for me at times because that's how I grew up.
Mm. It sounds like something like I'd like to jump on, because I dabbled in traditional fluency shaping for a while, only as an adult, for about 2.5 years, and mm-hmm. found that it didn't do much for me at all, because that's not what I needed to work on. I didn't need to work on speech mechanics, although it may sound like I do.
Yeah.
You know, I needed to work on feelings and acceptance and attitude, because I'd been extremely covert for years and years before that. So, you know, traditional fluency shaping has its limits, because just as you said, stuttering is so much more than just, you know, what comes out of our mouths. It's all that other stuff that we carry around with us.
Yeah. Now, speech is not meant to be controlled, but when you start controlling your speech because you're starting to control your stuttering, you end up speaking in a way that biologically and psychologically you're not really genetically programmed to do. I mean, people were not made to function in this way. I used to have the same problems in golf, you know, because the same problems in life and in stuttering show up in golf, you know. I would get a slice on the ball. The ball would start slicing or hooking, and so I'd go to the driving range and not have to focus on dropping my shoulder and, you know, keeping my elbow in and shifting my weight properly. And I would do that on the practice tee, but one of the things I found over time is that when I went on the golf course to actually play golf, if I kept focusing on that, I couldn't hit the damn ball because the whole golf swing is designed to be one entity. It's designed to have unity, and so you have to think about something else when you go out to play other than all of these things that you're supposed to be doing. The fact is that I could hit the ball thinking about all these other things that I was doing, but I didn't hit it very well.
Mm.
And I think speech is the same way. Speech is an expressive medium. It's designed to be spontaneous. You know, I understand why if you automatically default to blocking behaviors, that you need to practice something else so that you don't default to them. But there has to be a time when you get the sense of, so to speak, putting the whole golf swing together and just experiencing the swing as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
what I think is missing from a lot of speech therapy, mm-hmm. I think.
Let's switch gears just a bit, because I'm cognizant of the time. This always happens.
Sure.
We're having a great conversation. The time just flies. But I remember my very first National Stuttering Association conference was in 2006 in Long Beach, California. I was new to the whole idea of I'm not alone. I was new to the idea of being open to my stuttering, and again, it was my first conference. I was like absorbing everything like a sponge,
right.
And I bought your book.
Oh, an earlier version.
Yes, Redefining Stuttering. It appealed to me, and I remember being in the store and flipping through it, and I was just intrigued by it. So, what made you write the book?
Well, the book grew over 25 years. the book started out, I did my very first public speaking workshop at the Philadelphia conference of the NSA in, I think, 1985. I had been talking to John Allback earlier, and I said, you know, John, I have an idea. I said, we need to have some other kind of activity for chapters, and I'm thinking of maybe putting something together around public speaking. So he thought it was a good idea. So I started to observe what public speakers, you know, what people do when they stand up in front of a group, and especially what they did when they spoke well. And I eventually came up with a 10-lesson program. And the title of the book, because I put it together as a book, was How to Conquer Your Fears of Speaking Before People. And I added one essay called On Overcoming Performance Fears, which was observations about performance fears and what you need to do to address them and so on. And so I actually, the first version was printed on a dot matrix printer, if you remember.
I do. Wow.
And but then somebody donated a Macintosh to the NSA, and so I took over the Macintosh, and I ended up formatting the book in PageMaker, which was the first page formatting program, and I had about 65 copies printed at a local print shop, and I took them with me when I went to the conference in Philadelphia. And I did the workshop, and I gave out the manuals to all the people in the conference, and it seemed to go over well. And so I continued to add articles, because I wrote for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, when I had an idea for an article, I'd eventually sit down and write it up, and then I would add it to the book. So the book started out as 48 pages, and I finally finished the final edition last year, and it's now 649 pages, which is about as, I mean, it really got big. And I also have in the book many excellent pieces from other people, and it provides quite a resource for understanding what the stuttering system is about.
Wow.
But anyway, not long after I did the Philadelphia workshop, I got invited to come to it was either Dallas or Houston, I think it was Dallas, to run a weekend workshop. And I thought, wow, this is cool. I never thought I'd get to do something like this. Mm-hmm. And so I did a two-day workshop. Half of it was on the stuttering system, and the other half was on public speaking. And I ended up doing a number of workshops around the country, and that led to a connection to the McGuire program and some other stuttering related organizations, and I've ended up doing workshops in eight countries on three continents, and it's been really a great source of fun and learning and everything else.
Wow, that's really cool. Did you ever get involved with Toastmasters?
Oh, yeah. Actually, when I first came to San Francisco, I went to a meeting of the Junior Advertising Club in San Francisco for people under 30, and I went to the first meeting, and it was in a high-rise, you know, a downtown office high-rise, and everybody was sitting around a conference table, And the woman who was the president said, "Well, let's all introduce ourselves." And I thought, "Oh my God!" Because I was next to last, and I just suffered through, you know, while everybody slowly went around the table and made the introduction. And I was able to get my name out. I had a trick, which was sometimes if I could evacuate most of the air out of my lungs and spoke on the residual air, I could talk without blocking in this kind of situation. So I got it out, but I thought, if I'm going to come back to this group again, I have to do something. I can't go through this every time. So I looked around and I found found out about an organization called Toastmasters. And I thought, well, I'd love to do this, but I don't want to join a group where people might know me outside of the, you know, outside of the group because I have the stuttering thing. Uh-huh. I'm just embarrassed. So I looked around. I finally joined. I joined the Chinatown Toastmaster Club. So me and 15 Chinese, you know, guys would meet downstairs in the public room of Citizens Federal Savings on Grand Avenue. After which we would, you know, cross the street and have dinner at Hooey Gooey Louie's for $1.50. And that was my introduction to Toastmasters. I was in Toastmasters about 2.5 years, and then I dropped out and rejoined about 36 years later. And I'm now still in Toastmasters.
Okay, great. Have you achieved your DTM yet?
Oh, no, I'm still at my CTM. I got that, and that was about as far as I wanted to go in the manuals. But I entered a lot of competitions, and I, you know, won third place at the district level in 3 or 4 competitions, and I like to compete periodically still.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it sounds like you've come full circle with your stuttering journey. You started off it being something that you personally wanted to learn more about, and you wound up helping people all over the world. It just sounds like a wonderful journey that you've been on.
Well, it's been very satisfying. I get a lot of really nice letters from various people. I just got one from Ghana. Hmm. Last night it was an email from a young guy who had a question, and he said, you know, all this has been very helpful to understand what this is about. So, and I just talk with people, you know, all over the world as well, which is just too much fun.
Yeah, yep. Well, I can relate to that because, right, I've been talking to people all over the world too, and to me, it's just amazing that you can sit in your living room or, you know, in your home in New York or in California and have the technology today to be able to talk to people from all over the world. And it's fun. And you also get to realize that with all of our differences, we're all alike.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And you know, when I grew up, there was like one kid in my neighborhood who was 2 years older than me who stuttered, and I really didn't hang out with him because he was older. But I didn't know anybody who stuttered. I didn't know anybody that I could talk to about anything like this. And now, you know, you can sit down at your computer and actually see the people if you have video on Skype.
Yep.
And talk to them as if they were on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And so I just find it a wonderful time to, you know, connect with people, and I try and do it a lot.
Yeah. And I think that what we both do, I think it affords people the opportunity that are out there that maybe never have met, you know, another person who stutters and can be feeling that isolation and that hopelessness. By giving people an opportunity to just talk, it provides a lot, and that itself can sometimes be life-changing.
Yeah. By the way, the title of my book is called Redefining Stuttering, and then the subhead is What the Struggle to Speak is Really All About. and you can buy it on Amazon, but it is also a free download on at least half a dozen different sites.
Oh, that's great.
So you can download it as a PDF and have at it if you like.
Is it okay if I actually, is it okay if I link that to this podcast episode?
Oh, I would love you to do that.
Terrific. Terrific. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for being a guest and for sharing parts of your story with us. You've certainly touched lives, and you know, this episode, I'm confident, will touch other people's lives as well when they hear it. So again, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for the opportunity. I mean, it was, you know, one of the things I live for is to connect with people and to be useful in some way. So if this is helpful to people, I'm more than thrilled.
Awesome. And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.